This podcast is a publication of the Engineering Management Institute, where we are committed to building professional development systems, including project management and people leadership programs that support the growth of engineers and their firms. Download our AE Industry Trends Report for insights on the Great Resignation, remote work productivity, and people-centric cultures. To get your copy, visit engineeringmanagementinstitute.org.
Welcome to this episode of the Civil Engineering Podcast, the first podcast dedicated to helping civil engineering professionals succeed in work and life. I'm your host, James Taylor, and in this episode of the Civil Engineering Podcast, I'll be talking with Stephen M. Rinks, PE, PMP, the Director of Engineering at American Surveying and Engineering. Steve was previously seen on one of our other podcasts, the Quality Engineering Podcast, where he talked about quality control on transportation projects and some of the challenges you might have to deal with on those large projects. In this episode, we'll be talking with him about the intricate world of the ASCE Code of Ethics, exploring its historical roots, pivotal importance, and its significant influence on the realm of civil engineering. Let's jump into today's episode. It's now time for our Civil Engineering Conversation of the Week with Steve Rinks. Steve, welcome to the Civil Engineering Podcast.
Thank you, James.
Steve, can you share with us your career journey in civil engineering and how it led you to your current role as Director of Engineering at American Surveying and Engineering?
Sure, James. I started out as a double E major. That's electrical engineering. And you might say, wow, how did you wind up in civil engineering? So I like to say I'm the accidental civil engineer. You might say, why electrical engineering? Well, my father was a journeyman electrician. And guess what? The son should become something to do with electrical.
Yep.
Well, I tried that for a semester, and it didn't get very far. So I wound up in civil engineering, and that's where I spent my career, primarily working with consultants. I might say that through many trials and tribulations, I worked in environmental department, highway department, inspection, and also highway departments. To the younger engineers, I would encourage them to become a well-rounded engineer. Now, what's a well-rounded engineer? Well, let me give you an example. My career has been very, very fortunate. I have worked and lived in 20-plus countries around the world one time, and I would encourage younger engineers to get some international experience. Now, what was the second part of your question, James?
So it was, can you share with us your career journey and then
yes,
how it led you to your current role as the Director of Engineering at American Surveying and Engineering?
To the second part, my career's been with on the consulting side, and those projects are very cyclical. I used to work on construction projects at $1 million, $10 million, $100 million. Now we work on projects that are $500 million and above, even a $1 billion project. So when you think about that, think about how the resources that are required. What kind of staffing do you wind up needing on something like that? So you will find this business very cyclical, meaning they staff up, and guess what happens? They staff down. So I found myself in between jobs, and that's how I became a Director of Engineering at American Surveying and Engineering in Chicago.
You just mentioned you've worked in 20 different countries.
And lived and visited, correct, on 6 continents, by the way, around the world one time. Correct.
So what was your favorite place that you worked in outside of the U.S.?
Well, I spent 2 years in Kuwait for an engineering firm in Chicago. We did a master transportation plan for the entire country. And then the second year, we did preliminary engineering on 20 kilometers of roadway. And when you're in Kuwait, when you're in that part of the world, guess what, James? Within 3-4 hours, you get into countries that you would never have thought of back in the States.
That's pretty cool. So today, we're going to be diving into a little bit about the American Society of Civil Engineers Code of Ethics. And I guess to start off, what inspired your interest in the ASCE Code of Ethics?
Well, James, the good engineer always has props, okay? Is that somewhat in focus, James?
I can see it, yep.
You can see that?
Yep.
Well, this is version number 2, from what I can tell, from ASCE. Now, I had sent away for this, and actually it's folded in half. So I unfolded it, and I framed it, and I had it on display in my offices for a good number of years. Now, That was, as amended, let me read the date here on this, October 25th, 1980. So I got to looking at it, I'm thinking, well, I wonder if they ever updated that. Well, I went to their website, James, and I found it. However, it was only 2 8.5 by 11s, black and white. I said, oh. So I got a hold of a person at ASCE, and I says, you know what? I got an old version here. I got a copy here. It's in black and white, and it's in color now.
Yep.
But it took about a year for them to put that together.
Okay.
And then after they got it done, they didn't have the as amended date. That as amended date is October 26, 2020. Right now, that document is not on their website. Now, the ASC annual convention was held in Chicago this past summer, and staff there has indicated they'll make the color version available.
So Steve, what got you originally interested in the code of ethics?
Well, I hadn't really thought about that, and I'm not sure I got a good answer to that, James. But that's a good question, James. I want to say I can't say it's second nature because, nor can I say it's common sense because common sense is not so common.
Absolutely. Could you provide a brief history of the ASC Code of Ethics and its evolution over the years? You kind of talked about it a little bit, but
yeah. From what I can be able to tell, James, the first version was first ASC code was dated 1914, and then the second version is the one I shared with you, the frame one from 1980, and then the latest one is in 2020. But as for the evolution, I really can't speak to that because I was not part of that committee.
Oh, all good. The preamble of the ASCE Code of Ethics sets a tone for ethical practice. How do you interpret its significance in your career?
Well, preamble is quite lengthy, and I'll just read the major bullet points. This part is scripted here, James. It says, engineers govern their professional careers on the following principles, and there's four principles here. Bullet point number one, create safe, resilient, and sustainable infrastructure. Bullet number two, treat all persons with respect, dignity, and fairness in a manner that fosters equitable participation without regard to personal identity. Third bullet point, consider the current and anticipated needs of the society. And the last bullet point, utilize their knowledge and skills to enhance the quality of life for humanity. Now that says that's a lot that's going on there, James.
That is a lot. That is a lot of what the preamble says. So, how has that impacted your career when you go back and you look through that?
Sure. There are four stakeholders in the code of ethics after the preamble. The first one is the society. Next is the natural and built environment. Then we have third is the profession. Fourth is clients and employers, and the fifth one is peers. Now, when you share that code of ethics with the attendees, they can dive into more as to how those are fully described.
So, is it fair to say that when you look back at this ASC code of ethics and impact on career, you have these five stakeholders that are at stake, the people that we're impacting, that we need to make sure that we're holding ourselves to a standard to make sure that these five stakeholders are really at the forefront of what we do.
Correct, James. And they're all important. And there's a lot of conflicting interest at times, meaning the client may want to do one thing. Your supervisor may want to do another thing. Your sub-consultants, something else. Your contractor, something else. The public wants to do something else. And then we have the P word in there. We have politicians. And guess what? They want to do something else.
They want to do something else. Yep, exactly.
So I encourage the younger engineers listening to print this out, put it in your home office, your work office, and your residence, and also in your company's office in plain sight.
Steve, so You bring up a great point, right? All these different stakeholders have different interests and different things in mind. How do you balance between all those different stakeholders to make sure that you're getting the best outcome possible as a civil engineer?
Well, at some point, you're going to have to bring the principals in because there may be something going on. So that's a tough one. And for those that subscribe to Engineering News Record and also to ASC Civil Engineering Magazines, there are numerous cases, instances where things have gone awry, meaning a building has fallen down, a bridge has fallen down, people have died, lawsuits, loss of goodwill, lawyers are involved now. So I want to say it's a balancing act, so to speak.
Yeah, I know as engineers, we're called to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public. And yeah, I think the public is probably one that as engineers, we're always thinking about. Like you mentioned, the clients are the ones that are paying us. Our employers are also the ones that are paying us. Our peers are the ones that are around us. And then the environment is, you know, the thing that we're impacting probably, you know, and preparing plans associated with that. Do you feel like any one of those areas is often left out when thinking about stakeholder involvement?
It's a good question there, James. I want to say I'm in the education business. You know, actually, my title at times is I'm a janitor. I've been assigned to clean up an aisle 3. So, and sometimes I need a 55-gallon drum and a snow shovel and a big garage broom to clean things up. So I want to say education, especially on the client side, if I had to put my finger on something.
In your experience, what are some common ethical dilemmas or problems that civil engineers face?
Well, we can talk about those problems there a little bit. I thought we were going to have those slides.
We got some practice problems. They'll be up on the screen for everyone to see. And so it sounds like you're going to be quizzing me here.
Instead of
me asking you questions.
That's right.
I said putting me on the spot.
We want to make this interactive. So
perfect.
It sounds like you don't have a cheat sheet there. So
no cheat sheet. So let's go for it.
Okay. Practice problem number one. Maintaining competence to practice engineering requires a professional engineer. Now, you've got A, B, C, and D. Okay, I'm going to read A first. Read monthly magazine related to his or her trade. B, take continuing ed course from an accredited college once a year. C, maintain current knowledge of his or her discipline. And the last one, D, join a professional society in his or her engineering discipline. Oh, which one would you pick there, James?
Well, I'll say that all of these things are great and things that should be done. But as far as maintaining competence, I'm going to go with letter C. And thank you for giving me an easy one to start off with. And that's,
right.
I would say, maintain current knowledge of his or her of their discipline.
Ding, 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 ding. Okay, James.
So awesome.
You're 1 out of 4. Okay. Question number two. Or practice problem number two. A professional engineer may not A, serve as a board member of a private company, B, act as an advisor to a government bodies, C, delegate work to other licensed professionals, D, accept gifts from material or equipment suppliers for specifying their products, and then E is both C and D.
I'm going to go with letter D on this one, accepting gifts.
Very, very good. Very good, Jane.
And that's an interesting one, right? Because, you know, accepting gifts definitely is an ethical dilemma of, you know, you don't want to be accepting gifts and make it seem, you know, like you're specifying the products because of the gifts that are being received. If you believe in the product because that's what you're looking for a solution, then that's one thing, but you can't accept the gifts associated.
Now, Dave, I might put a spin on this a little bit. Going out with lunch?
It's a great question, right?
It's only a lunch.
Yeah. Well, it's only lunch, but I mean, again, I think it also depends on, and this is why it's key, I think, where bringing in manufacturers that might do a lunch and learn versus just doing, here's a lunch. You're getting knowledge out of it, not just the lunch.
Exactly. And at the same time, I might also invite on these lunch and learns his or her competitors. so your staff is not being swayed. Practice problem number three.
Number three. Here.
When issuing public statements or testimony, a professional engineer shall, A, be unconcerned about impugning the reputation of another professional, B, be as truthful as the client will allow, C, include only material that supports the claim of his or her client, or D, be complete, objective, and truthful.
The answer on this one, and this one took me a little bit when reading through, but it's definitely D. We have to be complete, objective, and truthful.
Yes, yes, sir. Okay. You're 3 out of 4 here, James. So we're on the home stretch. We got one more. Okay.
Make it an easy one.
It is.
Okay.
When issuing public statements or testimony, a professional engineer shall, A, affixing a signature or seal to any engineering plan or document in a subject matter over which the professional engineer lacks competence, B, practicing with a delinquent license, C, becoming involved in a conflict of interest with an employer or client without the knowledge and approval of the client or employer, or D, any of the above.
I'm glad you gave me D, because I'm sitting there going through and I'm saying A is definitely a misconduct, because you have to have the competence in the thing that you're signing and sealing. You obviously have to have a license to practice. And then C, I'm sitting there saying, well, obviously it's a conflict of interest and you need to notify both client and employer. So I'm going to go with D on this one.
All right. You're 4 out of 4, James. You get the gold.
All right. There goes the confetti. There we go. That's great.
Yes. It's party time. You go ahead of the class.
Awesome. Right. Good. That was great. And hopefully those that were able to play along at home could learn a few things about some of the ethical dilemmas facing civil engineers.
Yes.
There sometimes are those ethical concerns that take place. And ASC provides a complaint form for these concerns. How important do you think this mechanism is for maintaining professional integrity within the field?
Well, this ASC members agree to comply with the code of ethics and to report any observed violations by another member. Now this complaint form is actually a double-edged sword. You can use it, or guess what? It can be used against you. Right. It cuts both ways. Now, once the form is filled out, it's sent to ASC's Committee on Professional Conduct. And they will review the charges and confirm that an ASC member that is named and that the appropriate provisions of the ASC Code of Ethics are cited. Now, once it's been established, this form will be distributed to the ASC's Committee on Professional Conduct, which will determine if an investigation is warranted. Now, there's several parts to this form. Of course, you might imagine you got the name of the complaint. Next, you got the name of the ASC member or members whom the complaint is being filed against. Then next, you got the description of the conduct involved. And then next, you identify the specific provisions of the Code of Ethics which you believe the above conduct was to have violated.
Yes.
And you sign it and you date it and it gets sent in.
Now, Steve, what if you don't know the answer to this, that's okay. But when this gets submitted and gets reviewed, this is more of a complaint, not necessarily something that would force someone to lose their license, because the license is governed by each state's board,
correct,
whatever that might be.
Correct.
So if there is a true ethical issue, is that something where from there you would then make that complaint to the local board?
Yes, you certainly could, but I would bring in ASCE first to get their legal counsel to give you some advice on that. That's how I would approach it.
So when facing ethical dilemmas, where do you recommend professionals seek help or guidance, especially in complex situations?
There's several resources that are available. ASCE has a publication. It's called Guidelines for Professional Conduct, and that's dated January 2008. Okay. Next, you've got your own organization's leadership, but I also might make mention that you may want to contact your HR department and get them involved. Now, why do you think you would do that, James? Get your HR department involved.
Well, I think if there's an ethical complaint, you need to know from a human resources perspective how that's going to be handled by the company.
And at the same time, you're getting some documentation into your file because guess what? You could be known as a whistleblower, and there's protections afforded there. Okay. Next, you alluded to it, James, you got the state registration boards, if need be. And then, of course, you've got ASCE's ethics hotline. There's 800 number. And then there's other resources out there. You got the National Society of Professional Engineers. And then there's a National Institute for Engineering Ethics. So there's lots of resources out there for individuals.
And ethics is extremely important. Most states, I think, have some type of ethical, if you have a continuing education requirement, most of them have some type of ethics requirement associated with that. And tying that in, how can the ASCE Code of Ethics help engineers in their professional development?
Well, I like to think of that, James, as I make an analogy to wearing a seatbelt in a car. Okay. We get in a car, we put that seatbelt on, it's automatic. We don't even give it a second thought. So that's why I encourage engineers to use their seatbelt or code of ethics. And if you have it in display in your daily activities and you see it there, you begin to think about it, you start talking to your buddies, what about this? But you're right, James. I just renewed my Illinois PE license, and guess what I had to do?
Ethics.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. I had to actually take an ethics course from a certified provider, right? And if I'm audited, I have to show a documentation that I took that course.
Yeah, that's great. And as engineers, we should be at the forefront of ethics as it protects our industry and our profession as a whole. Lastly, Steve, what general piece of advice would you give to aspiring civil engineers who are just starting their careers?
Well, it's not a piece. It's pieces here, James.
It always is. It has to be, right? You can't just have one thing.
I can't.
Yep.
And there's no order. There's no order of importance in this. But, to begin with, I share with the younger engineers one of my top 50 LinkedIn posts. I would talk about, to begin with, is culture. Now, culture is not taught in school. So what's the definition of culture? It's the shared set of attitudes, values, goals, and practices that characterizes institutions and organizations. Now, this part is scripted here. This is my top 50 LinkedIn post here. An organization's culture is comprised of informal and unwritten values, norms and behaviors, patterns that are commonly accepted and observed by members of an organization. Organizations can have strong or weak cultures. Organizations with strong cultures include organizations such as Apple, Google, Facebook, and IBM. The culture of those organizations is strongly enforced through numerous informal rules. Weak cultures have hard to identify. Loose cultures that are strongly not enforced. Strong cultures are a means to achieve integration because people buy into a common set of values and operate from a common frame of reference. I would also like to bring in, let me see here.
What else? What else do I got here?
Oh. So number one was culture.
Yes, number one is culture.
Okay.
For today's younger engineers, work-life balance is more important than ever. Technology requires that we are available 24/7, 365. We need to work to live and not live to work. Your company's culture should recognize this and provides the means and methods to control after-hours communications. I would tell the younger engineers, we are not in a life and death business here. A lot of this stress is somewhat self-induced.
Right.
Yeah. Finally, I would paraphrase Thomas Jefferson's quote here. As a decades experienced professional engineer, I am an engineer in training, i.e., I'm a lifelong learner. Back to you, James.
I love that. And ending on a great note there of being lifelong learners, right? You have to continuously reinvest yourself, reinvest in your career, because engineering is one of those professions that is continually evolving. And if you stick it to where it was back years ago, you're not going to be evolving with the time. You're going to be really stuck back in old engineering ways and not looking at the innovation that's taking place as we move forward.
Spot on, James. I tell the young engineers, if you don't keep up with technology, then guess what? Technology is going to leave you behind.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And you're talking to someone who got started with a slide rule and a rotary phone. And that's going to be one of my LinkedIn posts. In my right hand, I'll have a slide rule and a rotary phone. And in my other hand, I'll have my cell phone.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, hey, all this was some really great advice, really great thoughts on the ASCE Code of Ethics. And we've got some more for everyone here with the Civil Engineering Hot Seat coming right up. All right, now it's time for our CE Hot Seat segment of the week with Steve Rinks. Welcome to the CE Hot Seat. Are you ready to go?
Yes, sir.
All right, number one, do you have any specific rituals that you practice every day? For example, do you have a specific morning ritual or lunchtime ritual, things that you do consistently on a daily basis that contribute to you being a successful professional?
Well, I run an occasional Chicago marathon, so I try to get up at 4:30 and get my miles in first thing in the morning. And getting those early morning runs allows me to plan out, think about my day ahead.
What is one book that you recommend to engineers regularly, or just one book that you have found to be extremely helpful in your professional and or personal development?
That's an easy one, James. I work with college students on the capstone projects, and this is one of their required readings that I have. It's called A Whole New Engineer. And what it talks about is primarily that it's about on-the-job learning. And that's what you're going to wind up doing. We think about OJT, on-the-job training. Well, that implies there's somebody there to train you. I can tell you right now, James, the environment we're in right now, we're doing more and more with less and less. And pretty soon, you're doing everything with minimal resources. So I would say for the well-rounded engineer, read this book.
Thinking back on your managers of the past, picture your favorite manager or managers. What made them your favorite?
Well, communication in our business is a big thing. And I would say that once you get in a supervisory manager position, you will find that there are engineers that you enjoy working with. And this is what I have found, James, is that I've been able to take some of those engineers with me, meaning I was fortunate.
I've got one final question, which is the critical civil engineering career elevator advice question. If you got into an elevator with a civil engineering student and had about 30 to 40 seconds with them to give them some career advice, what would it be?
Well, that's an easy one because it applied to me. And that is, I tell the younger students, and the universities aren't going to like this answer, and that is to save graduate school when you've been out for 10 years. Why 10 years? Well, within 10 years, you'll get a warm, fuzzy feeling just exactly where you want to go. And guess what? Your company may help offset the costs for that additional degree.
Steve, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can our listeners connect with you?
On LinkedIn. I'm a pretty heavy LinkedIn user. If I'm not on there once a week, I'm on there every other week. And if I ever do a like, my fat finger hit like by accident because I don't like to use likes. You cannot be any lazier than doing a like. I respond to my LinkedIn followers one-on-one.
I love it. I love it. Well, thanks, Steve. And connect up with Steve on LinkedIn, and I'm sure he's got some great things to share. So thanks again, Steve.
You're most welcome. Safe travels, James.
Please remember you can find the show notes for this episode at civilengineeringpodcast.com. There you'll find a summary of the key points discussed in today's episode, as well as links to any of the resources, websites, or books mentioned during this episode. Until next time, I wish you the best in all your civil engineering endeavors.